Mr. Coleril, three. Now, it was now time for you to go. You were drafted. How many went in the draft?
In the draft from the Dunga, there was 46.
And can you tell us about the journey out?
When we went to Liverpool, we went on a boat for the Duchess of York.
This would be in January.
This was in January, yeah. And the Duchess of York, we embarked the normal sea journey. I wasn't seasick. One of only 2 men we made one of the water. Well, they called it the Drunken Duchess. It was awful. It was a lineup, but it was.
What were the conditions like below deck?
Oh, it was quite good. I was in a hammock and...
No problems with that?
No problem at all. I just took the light with the control of that. And thus here we landed at Algiers after a non-eventful journey. Landed at Algiers.
What were your first impressions about that? That'd be your first time abroad, wouldn't it?
Algiers looked lovely from the sea, yes. Looked lovely from the sea when you got in, the smell. But then we had a guide I'd met with and said we had a few men to march. It was about 20, I think, to a place called Fort de Loup. Fort de Loup, we just hung about waiting for a little bit of training, but not much. We just lounged about in belt tents, you know. And then we, after a few weeks, we embarked on these trains. 40 men or 8 horses, you know. And we did a 500-mile or so journey up to the front line. We got off at a place that was called Toboba Main, where we went, Toboba Main. And then we went out and made a big trenches in the field. And the French paratroopers was on our right. And I don't know who was on my left. But within 2 minutes, one of our lads was dead. That called Coffin was the first one. He just came with us, you know.
Had you actually, is that where you joined the battalion, Toboba Main?
That's where I joined the battalion.
They were already there?
They were already there. And I joined Major Vizard's company, E Company.
E?
E Company. Was E a special company? E.
In what way was it special?
Well, it was an extra company, so that had been, the battalion had badly beaten up and sent him in. And there was only 100 or so left. And they formed a new Brazilian company and Major Vizard, well, Captain Vizard he was then. He got the job of E Company for getting all the reinforcements from England that was coming to where, reinforcements from the Middle East. He got them all together in E Company and he sort of trained in and sent you out to different regular company, then I got set up with B Company.
What was what was your impression of Vizard the first time you met him?
I liked him. He's Sergeant Major.
Who was that?
Arthur Pearson. He was only Sergeant Major then. And his first speech was, "I am Arthur Pearson, commonly known as the Rat. And I am a rat. If you don't behave yourself." But I found him quite great. He finished up Major Pearson. Major Arthur Pearson. There was a lot of talk about him, you know, trying to be the hard lad. But really, he was a good officer. He was a good sergeant major. As I say, then we got sent out.
So E Company was made up of drafts and things?
Just drafts covered in, yeah.
How long were you with them?
E Company, about 3 weeks.
Now, you came under fire almost at once, you said. That was an air attack, was it?
No. I believe it came from the French paratroopers. Quite honestly. Because the one that shell landed in the next field, but it was nowhere near us, and the next thing we see, Coffin was there. And I'm convinced it was the French paratroopers. The director was straight when he was killing.
Small arms fire?
Yeah. And Coffin, the poor lad, never forget it. You never forget your first when you see killing.
So, you while you were with E Company, you were just sort of a bit of familiarisation.
Just familiarisation.
How long did that last, do you reckon?
About 3 or 4 weeks.
Did you find yourself fitting in well in that period?
Well, you're a bit strange being abroad for the first time, etc. But seeing the lad that all came together, we were me a cigar.
Do you know what month you'd arrived in?
January, end of January.
And then after that you went to B Company.
Went to B Company.
And who was in charge of that at the time?
B Company was it was Major Duffy.
And what did you think of him?
They were all good officers. I had no dislike of any of them. They were all very fair and somewhat a little
And what about the men in B Company? What state were they in after said Janine, the ones that were left?
Oh, they had some bad memories of it, especially in beating up and that, and some were very nervous. But we were just to see myself later years, right, later months, but and the whole lot was quite reasonable.
They made you welcome?
Oh, yes.
Was there any you'd known from when you'd been in, you know, in England?
What I took, I looked for, but I'd been taken prisoner, said you need. And, I met one or two, yeah. I met one or two of the lads that had been with us in England. Not very many, because most had went to the 50 game, 6th, 8th and 9th, you see.
Now, how long were you at Toboga Mine then?
Toboga Mine, about three weeks.
So you moved from there to join B Company?
Yeah, to a place called Jebel Abiyod. And, after that, we just went forward in different actions, different places. Their names are a bit easy now, but Wingle Farm, all that code name.
Don't worry too much about the names if you don't. Do you remember any of these actions? What actually happened?
I remember one vividly. The Emerald City Belmari. That was a big mountain we're taking. There was four objectives: Jack, Queen, King, and the last one, the top, was Ace, where they were on top of. And we took Jack, Queen and King, all right. We'd taken Ace, so it was a hell of a job. And,
what do you remember? I mean, how did they plan the, you know, could you take us through how they planned the advance? You were just an ordinary rifle private then, weren't you?
Well, I was a rifle private, but one company took A, which was a low hill, and then B Company passed through them and took Queen. And then the other two companies came through them and took King, which was a ridge overshadowed by Ace, which is Jebel City Belmari. Well, we got pinned down there with mortar fire and such like. And we were on top digging in. There was a sergeant called Earl Stoll. He was a Canadian reporter, came for experience, but what a man he was. And we were on top, and I was kind of ammunition up, run back to the wadi and kind of ammunition up, and him, Tommy Redwood, was digging in. And the mistimed myself, and he put his pipe right through, pick right through Tommy's hand, so that was Tommy out the back then. And then he'd give you a letter, we'd throw back into the wadi. I was back in the wadi, and he came, he said, "Yeah, good on a patrol." He said, "You and Corporal Green and me, Sergeant Stone, you see." He said, "We're going to wait what we're on, we think he's moving out." So we went across the one river, looking about 2 miles long, across the one river, like, you know. We got right over to that side of this ace. And then he says, "All right, you stay at the bottom with the brand and give us cover if I had going up." And I was laughing at him. I thought, "That's easy, that." But I forgot I had to go back through this minefield myself when they got on top, you see. It was all mine, the mountain. But he led his way up fiercely, this stone like, and Corporal Cooley. And they got on top, and then they waved me up. They had moved out, but before they moved out, they threw everything back at the battalion on King. Everything they had, all that ammunition. So when I get to the top, he says, "Oh, don't touch anything, this stone. Don't, no matter what you see in your fancy, don't touch it." And he kept going around, tossing a string of hoop on and pulling all booby trap it was. There was even two prisoners, two brothers, two of our lads, lying in a trench booby trap. And as I say, we had no casualties. But then he called the carriers up, you see. I called up the carriers, I don't know where his men, but three had walked between them never.
Had you actually provided covering fire as they were going up? Or
I provided covering fire. I was ready, but there was nothing to fire at. There was nothing to fire at. I hadn't been done.
What sort of booby traps did Stoll uncover? I mean, how were they?
Well, he had binoculars on trees, just hanging. And, oh, look at that binoculars.
They blow up.
Everything.
What about the booby trapped prisoners? I mean, were you able to save them?
Oh, yeah, they were called the pioneers up, you see. That was our main experts, and the pioneers came up, and they fell round them and got all the way out of them. But it wasn't very often you seen that done. It was only one occasion I ever seen it done. But booby traps in houses when you went and you pull the chains and stuff, you know. When you went in these high family houses, you know, it was my first example of booby traps.
That was one of your first times under fire then, was it?
That was not the first time, but it was actually the worst time. I would say it would be about a third or fourth of that after the fire.
Do you remember the other things, or not so well, the other attacks you'd made?
Not so well, it was just 9 hours.
Were you nervous under fire? Or?
Well, everybody was till they got under fire, and then once you were under fire, they just left you. The time before was the worst. I mean, for example, say, you know, you're going in at 11 o'clock tonight. Well, then 4 hours, I told you, was the worst 4 hours. I would rather they just give us a 5 or 11, say, right there, you're going in, lad. But they didn't have told you beforehand, you know, and that was the worst part of it. It was the waiting and the, everything went through your mind. But once you actually got in, it was just self-preservation.
Yeah. What sort of thing went through your mind then?
Loss of a limb. The main thing. All had a dread of that, lots of limbs. You know. Everybody said it'd rather go straight out then.
And was there a discernible difference between you new lads and the veterans, the ones who'd been through Sedgenin?
There was at the time, the difference was that when we walked across an open space, and we'd hear a shell. The new ones would be down on the bottom straight away. But the old ones could tell, stuff new, and they'd just carry on walking, you see. But they never laughed at you through it. The new ones come to you the same as they did to them. And that was the main difference, that they knew one father was going to trouble with.
Any of the other actions you remembered? You mentioned Winkle Farm. Do you remember that at all?
Well, Winkle Farm was just a little wobbly village, like, you know, which... We got told on in there, but then we attacked in the water wheel. It was very little answer, yeah. And then the next one was when we went down from Jebel City, Belmarie, went to Salt Lake. It was a big salt lake. Now we were ready for the final push then. We of course didn't know all this. And we were put on a patrol, a standard patrol in trenches.
Now, what was a standing patrol? Can you just explain what it was?
Well, the tanks was behind us, and the salt lake was on the right-hand side. And the mountains were on the left-hand side, and it was this pass where I'd been coming through trying to get to the tanks. So we went on a standing patrol up the brook trenches, in between where they had to come. It happened, it was there, it was tragic, I think, because they give the order, everybody stands still. Because the engineers, our pioneers, was out setting booby traps. Then the countermanded the order when some of the lads was asleep. Says, right, you have two to stand to and two would come off, you see. So the lads fell asleep. And the pioneers came back. The order was, shoot anybody on sight, because our pioneers are back. Now the next trench to me, when he wrote his mate up, he didn't pass the message on that the pioneers are back. Well, we passed it on, our other three trenches passed it on to our men, but this lad forgot to pass it on, a lad called Wilson, and his mate was a lad called Huey Beale. So so they were slightly in front of us. And then we heard them challenging somebody. Well, we knew that there'd be no challenge, so we all started firing. Straight away, you see. But you didn't know you hadn't a challenge because he thought, well, engineers were still out, you see. Of course, he got right to the head, you mean. But we got them. We caught 40 of them. 40 prisoners. They lay there next morning at daylight, like we kept coming, you know. And we took them all in the next morning. I mean, it was good to get them a tank, you see. So Huey, of course, was dead. Huey committed cancer.
What about Wilson?
Oh, he got moved. He had to. He nerves were that bad over it. So he got moved. I don't know what happened to him after that. I've never seen him again. Then went over the top in the darkness and dug in front of this.
You moved forward into the valley?
Moved forward in front of a big mountain called Twin Tits. That was good day for a Twin Tits. But we were lying there all day. And about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I seen shadows come towards me, see? Well, you couldn't move, you're right underneath these Twin Tits. So we appeared up the top and there was two engineers. We shouted, for Christ's sake, get yourself down and get back. And they started to laugh. He said, it's over. We were lying there, the campaign was over. Then we stood up and all the battalion was up back where we had left, and they were up there enjoying ourselves, and nobody had thought of coming to tell us it was all. And we were still lying there. So as I say, when we came out and...
That was the end of the North African campaign.
The end of the North African campaign.
What, how had you settled in with the climate and the you know, the...
Oh, I don't bother.
You didn't have, it wasn't too hot for you or anything. What about the food you got?
Food was mostly couple rations.
What were they at that time?
Couple rations was 14 men. You had a couple of tins of maybe bacon. You had a packet of hardtack biscuits. You had, say, 7 tins of M&V, meat and vegetable. You had a tin of cheese, a tin of jam, 7 bars of chocolate, 14 bars of chocolate, 50 cigarettes, 2 tins of 50 cigarettes, and toilet paper.
And they came up in a box?
In a box. There were 3 boxes. There was A, B, C, and D. The air boxes contained puddings, dumpling puddings, you know, and well, that contained M&B stew. A different box had different varieties, but it was a good feed for 14 men per day.
And how would you share it about amongst you, the 14?
Well, when you cook it. When you could cook, when you could cook. I mean, when I first went in the North Africa, it was all rain, night and day. That was 30 weeks of rain, solid rain, and you couldn't cook anything. You just had to eat it as it was. It was already cooked, but it was cold, you know what I mean?
What about water or drink? What did you...
Oh, you just drank from the streams. You had your tablets for putting your tablets in to kill the bacteria, and then they had other tablets for taking the taste of that away. But we just from the streams.
Right. So now the campaign had finished. What did you do then?
Then we got sent to a place called Gariwo for to look after prisoners of war, because we were on very short rations then, because we had that many prisoners of war to be feeding. For breakfast, well, a ration of bacon. And 2 cracker biscuits, 2 hardtack biscuits, and a cup of tea. For dinner, you had half a tin of M&B. Half a tin of M&B. Another tin, you had a tin of rice between 5 years. And for tea, you had 3 cracker biscuits, about an inch square of cheese, and a small spoonful of jam. Now that was your ration for about a month. But then we got no prisoners of war. We had got him away and we had all the cages that we made, but we never got any. So where they went away, I don't know. But then they started organizing trips to go down to a place called La Caro. It's about 130 miles away. And all went there to get some heat, I'm telling you. Supposed to be bathing in the sea, but we didn't try and get some heat. But it was hard.
How did you get on with the local population?
Well, you very rarely seen them, Arabs. You see the Arabs, and you just have to tie your glove down when you see them, and you're close.
Well, they used to steal from me.
Oh, born books. And not clever with it, then. They were very clever with it.
Was there any trouble with them when you did so?
No, never any trouble.
Did you like them?
I tolerated them and tolerated us. It was good to get a lot of them.
So you were at La Cale. You'd have trips to La Cale.
And then we were shifted from there to a place called Hammam Lif. About, 10 miles away, Tunis. And the flies, so it was a seaside, well, on the sand there, it was a seaside place, but the flies, you couldn't get your dinner because of cover there, you know. You used to take a mosquito net and cover it over as soon as you got it from the coupling, but they were on the top of it, and you went in your little baby yak and you killed them all before you started eating your dinner with it. You just couldn't, there were that many of them there.
Did that cause any health problems, dysentery or anything?
Oh, I had an awful lot of it, yeah. I had an awful lot of dysentery.
Did you catch it?
No.
But a lot did?
A lot did, yeah. I was loose quite a while, but never caused dysentery. That's when Churchill and Anthony Eden came to see where it happened. They come along and they papered there was no sound. So Churchill, if it rains, probably you could hear him saying, what's the matter? Well, it's not the Eden. Eden says, it's a doodle. He says, find out what's the matter. He says, hello, Eden. Went to see you. They came back from the side and he says, well, I meant to be marked all night. They got here about 3 o'clock in the morning and they get up at 5:30 and they get ready for it. So Churchill says, all right. Get him a couple of days off in Tunis, you see. And they did, we got days off in Tunis.
Because so, when they'd shouted hip hip to cheer, you'd not cheered?
No.
Nobody had.
And he appreciated some of it wrong, like, you know. But when he said, you all go to Tunis for 3 days. But,
what did you do in Tunis?
Oh, I just had a look around the different states and I didn't drink much at the time, so I wasn't doing anything.
Did the army put any recreation, sport or films or anything on for you during this time?
When you were seeing any players at a certain length of time, we never had any recreation from when I had left England until then. And we still had none. We didn't really start until what, in Italy. But we never had any recreation until then. None at all. They just used to put the odd wagon on for you. Dinner, and you sat in the back and went to some place for a recreation. So then it wasn't worth the trouble of them anywhere. You got there, there was a bar with a few drops of vino in, a few eggs I had left, and that was it. You had money, you could spend it.
Now, what did you think was going to happen to you during this period? I mean, were you aware of the Italian campaign coming up, or do you think you'd be
aware something was coming up and we went back? We went from Hammam Lif, we were there about a month or 5 weeks. And we got sent to a place called Bleeder. And then we started training again.
Was there anything new in the training?
Well, just experience of what you had already learned in North Africa. And then we realised there was going to be a landing from Bleeder that took us to a place called Ferryville. And we were practicing coming in and landing practice, just like the right was on the wall then. And we spent quite a time in Bleeder. And then, what do you call the main port up there? Where the invasion started from, North Africa. But
Doesn't matter, doesn't it?
It's not going to be Berserker. Berserker. But Americans had the over-the-air cinemas and everything there, they really went to town entertainment. And as I say, we're doing this train at Federville, and then back to Berserker, and then went back on the... In Berserker, we went back on these LSTs.
Now, so you were still just an ordinary private at this time. What was it? How were they all put aboard the LSTs? What were they like, the LSTs?
Well, you just went aboard and you had your company, your platoons.
It took the whole battalion?
Yeah. The whole battalion, not one. You had a fleet of them. But your battalion went together. I mean, for example, when the Afghan campaign finished, they asked for volunteers for later driving Carden Lloyds. Well, the Carden Lloyds, the track vehicle, which is here by track, I volunteered for that. So anything else, I'm bringing 20 volunteers for that. So I passed my test. And then they decided that we were Carden Lloyds, the drug anti-tank guns were portees, what they called portees. They dragged the gun up into it and then they drove it like the wheels. So that was that job.
What was the Carden Lloyd like to drive?
Oh, Carden Lloyd was just two levers. One stop one track and the other one so round, you know, and you stop that track and the other one so round. It was easy enough to drive. I mean, I had never drove before.
You didn't drive a car then?
I didn't drive a car, nothing then. I learned to drive that in 2 days. Then I asked for volunteers to drive the motorbike. So
still while you're in North Africa?
A bleeder. This was a bleeder. So I went to start driving the motorbike.
Which one were you taught on?
Pardon?
Which type were you taught on? A bike?
Jordan, safe bike. So we had 2 days of that and then we moved out to Ferryville. So I was in the back of the 40, ready to go to Ferryville. And Sergeant Major came up.
Beckoned you.
He says, dispatch us to Bradley Center Hospital, take that bike. And I had 2 days on it, I had, you know, I had to drive about 150 kilometres. I says, I look here. Well, never. The journey in leg at the first year. There was a communist with lads in the trucks. I was stolen, I was covered up, I was stolen. But when I got there, I was a dispatch rider. I learned the hard way. When I got there, I was a dispatch rider. And I could drive, you know, but my first experience. Even the petrol union had fell off, and I didn't know what to put on. And RSM came behind me and said, what happened? I said, I don't know. We say you were dispatching that. I said, I'm trying to be working. And he put it back on. I didn't know the first thing about it. Honestly, I didn't know the first thing. Just how to kickstart it, how to pull the gear, and how to stop it. That's all I knew. But had a lap over later, like, you know.
Were you actually taking messages at the time, or were you just driving along with the column?
I was driving in convoy, going to get the bike, to get the bike there. But then when I got there, to start training, I was a dispatcher there.
What training did you have as a dispatcher? I mean, what was there to it?
Well, the majority of the training was riding the bike, control it, listen out for anything, and how to throw yourself off safely. Without harming your bike, without harming yourself, you think, if you hit your bike. That was your main field, throwing yourself off a bike.
Sounds painful. So were you actually a dispatch rider when you went to Italy? I mean,
when I went to Italy, I was. Yes.
Now, who were you a dispatch rider to? Were you a company dispatch rider? With
First
your
of all, I was an anti-tank company. I was really anti-tank gun, because in England I'd never been anti-tank gun out too, you see. So I was attached to the anti-tank company. Our own anti-tank.
That was with a support company?
Yes.
But you were just dispatch riding for them? Before you'd been in the infantry?
Yeah, I was dispatch rider for them and a spare anti-tank gunner, you see. But I wasn't qualified anti-tank.
I don't think we've covered that. What was the six-pounder like to fire?
The six-pounder, I trained on the two-pounders in England. That's all we had in England, the two-pounders, pump guns. But we've got 6 pounders abroad, mate. They're not quite good.
How many men were there to the team?
4.
And what did the numbers do to each one?
1, 2, 3, 4. 1 was a leader, 2 was a loader, 3 was a firer, and the other one was setting the ammunition up.
And you'd learned to do all those things?
Yeah.
What did you think of the 6-pounders compared to the 2-pounder?
The 6-pounder, they're good with the 2-pounder. They're just a pop good as far as the jelly tanks is concerned.